The Hand of Robin Squires, Chapter 17. After his capture, I was seldom able to see Actodon except at night. Because of his obvious strength, he had been put to work in the underground tunnel, whereas my uncle saw to it that I was kept busy above ground. So far, we had no need of the pump. Since coming to the island, not one drop of rain had fallen, an unusual occurrence, and one that worked in my uncle's favor. He insisted that I keep rechecking my father's calculations, which I had already done several times before, but which had to be done over and over in order to satisfy his increasing demands. With every day that passed, he became more and more obsessed with the idea something might go wrong with the project. In addition, I was required to build stone triangles that my father had designed as markers for relocating the main shaft and tunnel. These were important for the day when Edward returned for his treasure. I was also expected to remove buckets from the pulley, replacing those filled with dirt with empty ones. The buckets of dirt, brought up from the bottom of the shaft where the tunnel was being dug, were emptied onto a wagon drawn by 8 slaves, hitched to it like horses. Taken downhill and loaded onto rafts, manned by black men chained to the oars like galley slaves, the dirt was rowed out of the cove and dumped into the sea. This was a vital part of the plan. When the shaft and tunnel were completed, there must be no telltale signs, such as piles of dirt, to indicate the presence of tunneling below. Sometimes I was assigned the task of hauling stones from the beach for placing in the tunnel to prevent its collapse after the hard-packed earth had been removed and the sea allowed in. Through all this activity, the slaves, Actodon among them, were driven with whips and beaten with sticks to force them to work long after they were exhausted. Even the slave who had tried to jump ship on the voyage was expected to be useful, being chained with others to one of the rafts. The slaves were treated no better than dogs. At night, they were chained to the trees surrounding the clearing. Each was given a ragged blanket on which to find some comfort, a bowl of thin soup, and a chunk of bread. Nothing was done to alleviate the raw sores at their ankles or the whip wounds on their backs. I had expected that, as ship's surgeon, Powderlegs might do something to ease the slave's wretched condition, but he did not. Perhaps Edward had ordered him not to, but I think he was simply too lazy and indifferent to bother. However, when I went to the dispensary, he did let me take jars of salve, which worked wonders on the skin tortured by sores and whip wounds. I developed the habit of going round to the slaves after dark, when the crewmen were back on ship. Some of them would not allow me to be near them, and pushed me roughly away. They had reached the point where cruelty was easier to bear than kindness. Others let me tend their wounds and apply the salve. While I went about these duties, I sensed Actodon's dark eyes watching me, but whenever I went near him, he assumed the same see-through stare. I began to understand that this anger, which he directed toward me, was his way of holding on to his dignity. Most of the other slaves had long since lost their pride. It had been beaten out of them. But Actodon held tenaciously to his. It was evident in his eyes and in the way he moved. Even though he had become much thinner, his face gaunt and his hair matted with dirt, he continued to carry himself in his purposeful, confident way. Until the day he rebelled. It was morning, and the work crews were being lined up in the clearing beside the pit. When his turn came to climb down the ladder, he refused. He had reached a point of desperation where the rebellion that boiled inside him could no longer be suppressed. Of course it was a mistake. As soon as Billy Bowles realized that Actodon had no intention of entering the shaft, he brought his whip down on his back in a succession of brutal blows that kept coming until Actodon was forced to his knees, his back a mass of raw, bleeding welts. From where I stood, I could see the edges of skin were shredded and torn. Anger and disgust welled up in me. I wanted to wrench the whip from the bullying monster, but I knew better. I was slowly, painfully learning the wisdom of self-control. It would be a pointless exercise to interfere. The first mate would only turn on me, and afterwards I might not be in a condition to help Actodon. Better to swallow my anger and wait until I could be of real help. To make matters worse, Actodon was forced to work in the tunnel the rest of the day, even though he could hardly crawl into the pit. That evening, when I found him in the clearing, his wounds were tightly packed with dirt. He was too exhausted even to eat the crust of bread or drink the cold soup left beside his blanket. He lay, his knees pulled up to his chest, I suppose to ease his pain, his eyes vacant and staring. When I knelt beside him with the jug of seawater I had brought with me, he gave no sign he even noticed me, which wasn't unusual, except this time his eyes were empty of anger. Anger, his final weapon, had been stripped away. "I'll fix your back," I said. He made no response. I could do what I wanted. It no longer mattered. It took several jugfuls to wash away the mud. At least the dirt had prevented black flies from infesting his bleeding stripes. Though the seawater stung, Actodon made no sound as I worked. At last the wounds were clean, and I spread salve thickly on top. "It will feel better tomorrow," I said. To my surprise, he answered me, the first words he had spoken since his capture. "I die here," he said. "My people not come." "You won't die," I said, though I had a terrible fear that what he said was true. All this time, he had been living on the hope that his people, probably his brother Tagalog, would come looking for him and somehow manage to free him. He did not know that his canoe had been set adrift. "I die," he repeated in that definite way. "I see my people no more." I had to find a way of distracting him, of giving him hope. "Look at the stars," I said. "There are so many of them tonight." And it was true. The night sky was ablaze with stars. He turned his eyes upward. "The star people see me. Last night I dream. Muin says she come," he said. "And will she?" "She come, but I cannot follow now." "Can Muin help you?" "Only if I free. I must go to her. I die. Then I see her in the land beyond the skies." He found hope in his belief that he would join the star people. If he died, he would go to the land beyond the skies, where everything was perfect and good. Even if it meant he had to die to go, that land was far better than enduring this cruel existence. I said no more that night, nor did I make promises I was not sure I could keep. But I was determined to help Actodon escape. And I would do it as soon as possible, while he still had the strength to get back to his people. But was it possible? The only way to open the manacle chaining him to this island was to use the master key that was used to open all the manacles. And it was suspended from Billy Bull's belt by a long loop of wire so that he could use it without having to remove it. I had seen him use it many times. How could I hope to get it off? The seeming impossibility of this task depressed me because I could see no alternative. To talk to my uncle about freeing Actodon was useless. I had tried that and failed. If I were to approach him again, he might guess my intention and put me under close watch, which would prevent me from doing anything. As it stood now, I could move about much as I pleased. The more I thought about it, the clearer it became that Actodon would never be allowed to return to his people, even after the tunnel was finished. He knew about the shaft and tunneling, and therefore would probably tell his people where it was. My uncle would never take that chance. I did not know what Edward intended to do with the slaves when their work on the island was finished, but I was certain his plans did not include freedom. In any case, because of the dangerous work and the way they were driven, it was possible that none of the slaves, including Actodon, would survive the summer. The end of chapter 17.